Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, how does a rebellious young person growing up in the housing projects of South Boston, one of seven children, essentially raised by your mother alone, end up becoming known for her prune-stuffed gnocchi with foie gras? Well, we invited Barbara Lynch of Number 9 Park and owner of several other restaurants into our studios to answer that question and to talk about her new memoir. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Can I say that gnocchi I still dream about? Can I tell you that?
Oh, that's good.
Oh, my gosh, it's incredible. So we'll talk about how you came up with that signature dish. But your book, Out of Line, mm-hmm. right, A Life Playing with Fire, talks about your story, and it is a remarkable it's a remarkable story, and you know that now. That
it's sinking in now, for sure.
So you start by talking about having to steal pine nuts to make pesto when you were very young. Tell us that story.
Oh, yeah. I mean, very young. So one of my best buddy's friends, she was in AA at age 13, and I didn't have much money at 13. So I went to the North End, and I was like, I'm going to make her pesto. But you needed pine nuts, which my mother didn't have. That was very foreign. Basil and pine nuts were extremely foreign.
Those were
exotic for a Southie. So I did go to the North End, and when I saw the price, I nearly fainted. So I did steal them and made an incredible pesto. But then, like 10 years later, I went down to J. Pache and Sons and gave them the money. Then said I stole them a long time ago.
How did they react?
They're like, what? What are you talking about? But I said, just feels I'm not guilty anymore. So here, you know, just I paid back.
Yeah. But, you know, that story of saying, I want it, I'm going to get it, and that really rebellious, I mean, you had several very rebellious stories in this book. I mean, when you look back at it now, I mean, what, you rode on the back of an ice cream truck, right?
And I broke my legs.
Right. You wound up in the emergency room. I mean, right. You did things like this all the time. You were really...
Jumped off a roof with my Mary Poppins umbrella. I mean, don't try that at home.
So you really were well, what do you think it was about cooking that helped sort of ground you when you were that kind of a person? You know?
Yeah, just you know, those were the crazy things I did, sure. But the cooking part of my life is where I felt most calm in. Like, in as chaotic as a kitchen can be, I felt very comfortable and not chaotic, and mm-hmm. just. I could blank everything out and everyone else out and just focus on my own job or what I was doing. I mean, when I say I truly love cooking, I love cooking. Like, I'm a plain eater.
Really?
I could eat this Irish soda bread breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or a peanut butter and jelly sandwich every day. The part that I love, I'm not a foodie. I'm just I love the creating part, the cooking part.
Mm-hmm. We should say that our producer actually made your recipe for Irish soda bread to try it, and it looks beautiful. So when you mentioned this Irish soda bread, she did make it. You can take a bite.
I'm spreading all the butter on it.
Okay.
I love it, though. And I'm so proud she did caraway seasoning.
Yeah, she did.
Real deal.
Yeah, currants. I mean, really.
No cheating on the recipe.
No, even... she didn't cheat at all. Followed it. And we're going to have to taste it at some point here. But I want to get to the cooking part again. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you stole the pine nuts to make pesto when you were 13 years old. And you say that this is sort of what ground you. But what was really interesting to me in the book is that cooking for you in high school, your home ec teacher recognized that was the only thing that was going to keep you in
school. Oh, God, yeah. She was.
So tell us about that.
Adamant. So the home ec program was phenomenal when you think about it now. My Susan Lagoza was my home ec teacher, but she also was a master pastry chef at the Cambridge Culinary School at night. And Boston, it was right in the height of forced busing. So again, a chaotic environment. There was just fighting every day. And they actually put me in a special class, which, you know, I didn't know then that I had dyslexia and ADD. But so I was a bookie in my math class. And then the home ec class I would go to on my days. And then if I didn't have home ec, I was cutting out of school at 10:30 in the morning to go hang with my friends at Cardinal Cushion. So she did notice that cooking was natural to me. It came natural to me. And she noticed that I loved it. And she talked my guidance counselor into keeping me, letting me take home ec for 4 years. And that way I would stay in school. Hmm. And I did stay in school. I just never graduated. Hmm. I was 2 points shy, so I had other things to do in the summer than get those points.
You know, it seems it's almost sad in a way. I don't know that it could happen today.
No, I don't know. But you know that my school was real. They were great. My guidance counselor and his wife and Carl Fogel, who was the principal at the time or the headmaster, came by and gave me my I tried for my GED. I failed at that. And then once I got famous, I'm going to say it's about 7 years later, they came with a little, here's your graduation. And I was grateful. I mean, you know, I did enjoy the teachers there. I just didn't, I wasn't a really good student.
So what made you want to shift? I mean, so you realize that you love this and it calms you, it sort of centers you. When did you say, I think I want to do this for a living?
Well, I think I definitely knew I wanted to be a chef when I would observe Mario Bonello at the St. Botolph Club. Mm-hmm. And what struck me was how happy he was making people with food. Just by cooking great food, he made so many people happy every day. So I said, I want to do that. And then my first job was on a boat in Martha's Vineyard. And I lied my way in to get that job, and it became a huge success. Like, Carly Simon came on, and Evening Magazine, it used to be a show, mm-hmm. came on, and we were killing it. And it was just so gratifying to me. It was like that instant gratification that I'm actually cooking and people are loving it. And right. that's what made me keep going.
Right. You also worked with Todd English,
uh-huh.
right?
Yes.
Olive's Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Tell our, you say it in the book. Can you tell our listeners what he was like? Sounds like he was volatile.
Oh, my God, he was very volatile. He was crazy. He was just a super, you know, I think he was super young. And to be an executive chef in a lot of press around that time, I think he was the first chef to bring like live wood-fired oven and beautiful Italian food. And he was a man, like a bold guy, like just bold flavors and just a screamer. And now that I think back, I think he just had a stress on him. But here I come, no experience, no cooking experience. And he would scream at me all the time. At one point, I just said, I've never been disciplined, or I've never been organized. He's like, well, you better get organized.
And he threw pasta at you, or butter? Threw butter at someone
else. No, he'd throw butter at a general manager, like a whole pound of butter on a general manager, if he was mad at him. Like, can you imagine a pound of butter on your brand new shirt and tie? And, you know, I was with him for 8 years, and eventually we got along. And then he really liked me because I could cook and I could, you know, I could kind of read his mind on what he wanted to do. So he changed the menu every day pretty much. And if I was done prepping my station, he'd throw like two more specials on me. And then he and I came up with Figs, the concept Figs. And
which was his other restaurant.
Which was mm-hmm. Little Olives in Charlestown. Then he moved up to 10 City mm-hmm. Square, a larger restaurant space. And so it was amazing. For me, it was like literally like my first kitchen opening. Like, I ordered all the equipment and hired the staff and did the menus. So that was another like, oh, I like this. This is nice, right? And then I kind of got a little bored about pizza and pasta. I felt like I needed to have the whole restaurant situation. I needed an appetizer, an entree, a dessert, and real silverware and linen. I wanted my own restaurant. So when I quit, that's when I told him, I was so petrified to tell him, but when I did, I just loaded the oven with all the bread because we had a whole small wholesale bread company. Here's all this beautiful bread baking. And when I gave my notice, he's like, what do you mean you're leaving? Why didn't you tell me you're bored? And he took a sip of his Diet Coke bottle and whipped it at me, and I ducked, and it went right into the brick oven.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had to, like, clean all the glass out, do another load of bread. But and I ran out one door, and he ran out the other. And I was like, just, for Christ's sake, you should be proud of me. And if this job doesn't work out, like, I got to try to be this chef. I got to try it. And if it doesn't work out, can I come back? And I said, you should be like a supportive.
Right.
I was always petrified to yell at him back. Once I did, it's not in the book, but when I did yell at him once, I got so nervous. I got the hives. I had to get rushed to the hospital because I couldn't breathe.
Come on.
No, I'm serious. I was like, lose out here. He wouldn't drive me to the hospital, but, you know, it's like, take a cab. That's when I realized I got to find my voice.
Uh-huh. Right, right. And you've made up with him since, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think he could be a little bad at me still. Because I learned what not to do from him as well. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't too shy about saying it in the newspapers.
You know, you wrote in the book, I had periodic flare-ups of awareness that my Southie accent, my constant swearing, cultural ignorance marked me as a project rat. I wasn't ashamed of who I was, but I didn't want to be a curiosity. Do you ever feel like that?
Not so much now. I think, I feel legit now.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I have changed. I mean, I have not changed, and I have changed. I've grown up. I'm proud of where I am, where I came from, and who I am right now. I always wanted to be somebody else, like a Joelle Robuchon or Alain Ducasse, but...
Tell us who they are.
Oh, those are, master chefs mm-hmm. that I've studied through books, and they were my carrot. You know, Alain Ducasse has maybe, 12 restaurants, all 3 Michelin stars, and that was my goal, to become something like him or a master chef. But now I'm 53, and I think around age 49, I was pretty happy with me. I'm very happy. I'm proud to be Barbara Lynch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm proud of where I came from. I mean, I really did have a fun time growing up, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Right. Tell me about how you think that background influences your work.
Oh, I think it influenced me on loyalty. I'm really big on loyalty and teamwork, camaraderie, and morals. And we all stuck together. My gang of friends when I was growing up were my support system. And I think that you need a support system in any sort of job atmosphere or in a kitchen. You need to be supported.
Right.
And that's probably where that came from. And my risk-taking, I guess, too. And what did I have to lose? I had nothing. Hmm. So go for it.
Right. Well, why do you think you were so successful? Was it because of that, in a way? I mean, I imagine you had to also be very resourceful, right? What happens when you can't find the key ingredient or something burns or 80 people more than expected show up or, you know, all of those things? You have to know how to deal with all of that stuff, right?
I was very resourceful. I think that is the survivor mode in me. You just don't know what's going to happen. On a day-to-day basis, you know, is your mother coming home? Is, you know... She would also have us out from 9 a.m. until supper. So, you know, it's just one of those, I feel like sometimes I raised myself, so I had to be self-sufficient and figure things out.
Let's talk about opening that first restaurant at Number 9 Park, restaurant of yours, and that recipe. Where did it come from?
that one was, so yeah, Number 9 is almost 20 years old, so... I would say 19 years ago, I got asked to do 6 gnocchi recipes for this in the business magazine. And I wanted to come up with 6 different recipes for gnocchi. And that one just came in I went to Bergamo once, and I saw a cookie that looked like the prune gnocchi. And I decided to make a potato dough gnocchi and fill it with prunes. And so that's how that started. And the foie gras sauce I thought would be extremely different. The Italians would never put foie gras with pasta. Right. And so that was just one of 5 other recipes I came up with for that magazine. And that one happened to stick.
And you say that this Irish soda bread that our producer made here is one of your favorite breads. So we have to have you try a little bit on
it. It is
air.
Delicious.
Just a tiny bite, because we need to still talk with you for a couple more seconds.
She did great.
Tell us how she did.
She did perfect. The crust is amazing.
Yeah,
Does she make bread all the time?
She's a really good cook, so she really wanted to see if she could do it. So
you have to try what the butter on it.
Yeah, I will. I definitely will. Thank you very much. But first, we have to say goodbye. Barbara Lynch, multiple James Beard Award-winning chef, owner of restaurants including Number 9 Park, B&G Oysters, Drinks, Bortello, and Menton?
Monton,
sorry. Her new book is Out of Line, A Life of Playing with Fire. She'll be speaking at the Brattle Theater on Tuesday, April 18th, and at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum on April 27th. For more information, visit our website, radioboston.org. Barbara, thanks very much for
coming.
Thanks
so much.
That's it for today and this week. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. This is Radio Boston.